Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference. You can find more podcasts like this by visiting www.educause.edu/podcasts or subscribe to our iTunes feed by searching for EDUCAUSE. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference. Participants include Tracy Chapman, Executive Director of E-Learning and Technology at Creighton University, and Aylin Wise, Assistant Director for E-Learning at Creighton University. The session is entitled Distance Student Learning, the Addition of Rich Media and an Assessment of Outcomes.
Good afternoon, everybody. Let's go ahead and get started. Thanks for being here. We're well aware that we're right before lunch. So for those of you that sat in the front, kudos to you. Give yourselves, because you cannot sneak out early as easily anyway and go get your lunch early. So we will be very careful of the time and trying in on time, if not a few minutes early. We did bring paper handouts, and some of those, well, all the ones that we brought got distributed. So if you want a handout, did not get a paper copy, they're going to be available online. So just take great notes, because you know there's going to be a lot of really good information. So my name, we do not have a convener, so we're going to kind of do self-introductions here. My name is Tracy Chapman, parens, not the singer, for those of you who get that. And you don't want to hear me sing, and some people that I was with last night could back me up on that. My title is Executive Director for E-Learning and Technologies at Creighton University. We'll kind of introduce Creighton here in a minute. The scope of my responsibilities include e-learning, instructional design, graphic arts, web development, back-end service support. We have sysadmins, help desk support. So it kind of runs the whole gamut. So let me let Aylin introduce herself.
And my name's Aylin Wise. I am the Assistant Director for the Division of E-Learning. The scope of my position is to oversee online education, assessments online and offline now, and instructional design and instructional technology.
And we'd really like to, even though this session is a little bit larger than we had anticipated, that's great, but we would like to keep it kind of informal, so if you have questions, please feel free to ask them. If we feel like we're getting a lot of questions and we're running out of time, I may ask you to hold them to the end. But please feel free as they, you know, come to mind to bring those up. Our goal for today is to provide with you and share with you the process that we went through to identify a need to be and make the case that we did have a need to put some lecture capture, classroom capture, hardware and software into classrooms, what that process was like to identify that need, with a process we went through to identify the solution that we selected, and then the data that we collected to demonstrate the effectiveness of once we had it in place, and then kind of the next steps that we've taken after that. So hopefully some of this is a broad enough framework that even though our context may be a little bit different, it's a process that you could take back to your institution and use. Okay, so today what we're going to do is we did our little introduction here. So let's talk a little bit about the selection process that we went through. One of the, my background is I come from K-12 education. I used to be a special education teacher and then moved to higher ed. And so I work really hard, as does all of our staff, to make sure that whatever we do is grounded in pedagogy, not the latest and greatest in technology, because there's new technology out there that we think we want to adopt. So we really... I think sometimes the staff in the office get tired of me reminding them, if things aren't working, technology is not going to fix it. Good pedagogy is going to fix it, and that's really what we focus on. So, a little bit about Creighton, some context for what we did. We're in Omaha, Nebraska, which, by the way, is not much colder today, I think, than it is here. We have enrollment about 6,900. I think it's up a little bit this year from that. We have very comprehensive for such a small school, arts and sciences, law, nursing, medicine, dentistry, pharmacy and health professions, pharmacy, OT, and PT. And Aylin and I work in the school that has pharmacy, occupational therapy, physical therapy, all clinical doctorate degrees.
My pleasure now to introduce your speakers.
Okay, so let's go on from that. So about 8 years ago, our dean at the time was truly one of these people that has a vision. You know, so I went to the ECAR session right before this, and they talked about transformational leadership, and he was definitely a transformational leader. Everybody knew in the school that there was a huge shortage of pharmacists throughout the U.S., and it's going to continue with the aging population. But we could not increase the number of pharmacists that we were graduating because of just physical space constraints. We didn't have the money to build additional laboratory spaces and classrooms and things like that. So he reached out and received a grant, $1 million grant as startup funds, to create the nation's first online distance doctor of pharmacy program. And I can tell you that when we started this in our accreditation agency, gave us the green light kind of to go ahead. But one of the things that they said to us is you have to show us a plan for the students that are in the distance pipeline. When this fails, what are you going to do with them? Not if, but when. So when this program fails, what are you going to do with those students that are maybe in their third year, those distance students, you don't have room on your campus for them? And we could not move forward until we gave that to them. So that really made us dig our heels in and go, well, we're going to show you. So the good news about that is you can see our retention rates are very high, as they're equal to our campus students. So we have parallel programs, distance pharmacy students, campus pharmacy students taking the same courses at the same time with the same professors. 110 campus, 55 per year distance. We're going to bump that up next year to 65. And these distance students take 14 to 18 hours online per semester every semester. And then they come to campus in the summers for 1 to 2 weeks for their hands-on lab experiences. Very, very intensive distance education program, which is what kind of eventually led us to look at classroom capture software. So we gathered data. We had, you know, several cohorts of these students that went through, and we kept hearing information to tell us that they needed more information. They needed a closer parallel experience to the classroom experience, which flies in the face of everything you read about distance education pedagogy. So we gathered the data, we interpreted the data, we identified what our needs were, created a decision matrix to identify the product that we were going to select, explored our options, and made the decision. Not rocket science, but having this model, I had this printed out, put up right next to my desk, so that when I felt like we were getting off track and we weren't kind of making progress and identifying what we needed to do, it would kind of, you know, bring me back to say, here's where we are in the process, and keep the process focused. Again, guiding principles grounded in good pedagogy. Why in the world would we want to capture these hour-long lectures that were going on in the classroom and deliver them to distance students? Again, everything you read about distance education pedagogy says it's a bad thing to do. Who's going to sit and listen to an instructor talk about pharmacology for an hour, day after day after day, when you're sitting in front of a computer? You're not sitting next to your friend who's going to nudge you and keep you awake. So I wanted to make sure that we had some good pedagogical tenets that we were grounding this decision on. And so I went to Chickering and Gamson, well-known, I think widely accepted principles of good education. And the ones that they're emphasized here in bold and in kind of reddish color were the ones that we felt like having this lecture capture, classroom capture solution would really help us achieve. So as I talked with faculty and administrators about funding for this, I could point to this and say, this is going to help us achieve these tenets of good pedagogy, and that really helped advance the argument to get it. Again, this comes from, I think this was an EDUCAUSE review, an article. So always putting learning first. We wanted to make sure that we were aligning this expenditure with the strategic goals and the mission of the school. We wanted to make sure, as I'm going to talk to you about the automatic pieces of this, one of the things that was happening is our instructional designers were taking a huge amount of time to do really mundane rote things. So how could we better leverage their time to help the faculty work on online pedagogy and building online courses? So we wanted to invest more in the people, helping them develop, and then and getting the right technology in place so that that could happen. And you know what? As you're looking for new solutions, any of you who have done this, you know at some point you got to say good enough is good enough. I mean, this wasn't the be-all, end-all. We're not getting MGM quality video out of this, but you know what? It's good enough. And it works for our students, and we heard that loud and clear from them. We actively involved students in the process. We listened to them. We let them know that we were listening to them. We collaborated, reached out to colleagues around the U.S. about what were they doing in similar kinds of circumstances. So knowing that that was kind of the tenets that we were working around, we gathered some data from students to say, do we need this or not? So we had several years of end-of-course evaluations that we looked at. We had student exit surveys. As students started graduating from this distance program, we looked at what they were telling us on their exit surveys. And then we looked at grades, comparing grades from the campus students to the distance students. Kind of took all three of those data points over a few years and said, you know what? Clearly the students need to have a better sense of what's going on in the classroom so that they to enhance their learning. What the data told us, what the students were telling us, why they wanted to see what was going on in the classroom and hear what was going on in the classroom was, faculty were standing up in the classroom and having a chemical model, and they were putting it together in front of the students. And the distance students, if some of the faculty at that time were capturing just audio of their lectures, they heard this going on, but they had no visual to put with it. Or faculty were putting up a PowerPoint and going, now look right here, and the distance students are like, what? Look where? Where am I supposed to be looking? They knew that they were missing a lot of stuff. They weren't getting the nonverbals from the instructor. When some of our instructors are very animated and emphasizing certain things by facial expressions or, waving their arms about and things to help the students identify what's really the critical material they need to be paying attention to. And our distance students were completely missing that. And we were seeing some pretty significant differences in grades between the campus and distance students in certain courses. And the students, we kept hearing over and over and over again, they were so happy we had started this distance program. I mean, the first students coming in, they would when they were on campus, they would say things like, I never thought I'd be able to go to pharmacy school because they were place-bound for various reasons, but now they could go, and they would cry. And I would kind of go, apologies to any pharmacists in the audience, seriously? Like, you have this passion to go be a pharmacist? But they did, and that's great. It's great for all of us because we're going to need them at some point. And they were feeling very disconnected, though. They were so excited to be in the program, but they were feeling like they were an island out there. No matter how much we reached out to them with discussions and chats and things like that, they were still feeling very disconnected. And I think a lot of these things, even though we did the kinds of things that the distance education literature tells us that you should do, But when you're taking 18 hours online a semester, there is no time for niceties. There's no time for, I'm going to get in the chat room, you know, and visit with my friends about what I did tonight. They don't have time for those kinds of things. They have to be focused on their coursework. That their education is a 40-hour a week plus job for them. So some of these things that we saw happening had not been addressed in the literature before, and we kind of had to figure out how to mitigate them. So looking at that data, we kind of culled it down to, we knew that we needed most of our faculty lecture from PowerPoints, and a lot of them are pretty good at using PowerPoint. And a lot of our faculty had started to audio record. They would bring an audio recorder to the classroom with them and record their lecture. So the students were hearing that, and they had the PowerPoint, but they weren't synchronized. And, of course, the faculty weren't saying, slide 3, slide 4. The students just had to kind of figure out when they were changing slides. Again, they needed to see what was happening when they were doing a demonstration, when they were pointing out something in the PowerPoint. The students needed to be able to see that. And automation was huge. One of my non-negotiables as we looked at different vendors was, as this capture happened, between the capture happening in the classroom and it being available to the student, that process had to be automated. I mean, we had, at the time, 80 courses online, 2 instructional designers. We didn't have time for them to be rendering stuff and making links and all. We just couldn't do that. So automation was huge. That had to be there. And for the faculty perspective, we could not expect faculty to walk into a classroom, I'm going to push this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do 5 or 10 steps, I'm going to make sure it's recording, now I'm going to do my lecture, then I'm going to leave and shut it all down. Faculty had to be able to walk in, put on the microphone, and lecture just like they always have. It had to work the same way that it always has. And this, we wanted to make sure that we were making our students feel connected. For any of you from private schools in particular, happy alumni, give more money, right? So this kind of goes to what is IT's role? Where does our realm of responsibility extend to now? I mean, I think we have some responsibility to make sure that not only are our students getting educated well, but that we're making sure that they're feeling connected and part of the institutional community so that when they graduate, they still want to be connected to us. Yeah. She's interpreting. So there's some seats over here that there were reserved, but nobody's sitting in if you want to move. So, yeah. Okay, so we knew, based on that data that we collected at an EDUCAUSE event, you know, I kind of went around and I thought, okay, this lecture capture thing seems to be what we need, some kind of lecture capture solution. So we put together a decision matrix to say what components of these different lecture capture solutions are we going to look at. So it had to have audio. We knew that it had to capture whatever was coming through the data projector on the screen. We knew that we wanted a video of the instructor so they could, on the fly, say, well, I'm going to do a short demonstration today, and that would be captured. We wouldn't have to plan that in advance. We knew that we wanted all 3 of those components to sync, the audio from the classroom audio system, whatever was fed through the data projector, and then the video of the instructor. As I mentioned, we knew it had to start automatically and stop automatically. We're a Microsoft shop, all Windows. We don't do Macs. Not that we don't like them. It's just that we've had to standardize on some things. And when our students go into practice, they're going to encounter PCs, so we're a PC shop. So it had to be, you know, kind of Windows-based. That's what we were looking at. It had to be, of course, easy for the students to navigate, easy for the faculty to navigate. We wanted to be able to pull out audio files. The other thing that we heard from our students, and again, this just, I can't imagine this. They they would take the audio files from the lectures, even before we got lecture capture, burn them on CDs and like listen to them at the kids' soccer game. I mean, can you imagine biochemistry at the soccer? Oh, please. But that's what they do, and it works for them. So the audio had to still be very mobile. We had to get different speeds, even though we require our distant students to have a high-speed connection. High-speed connection means different things depending on where you live, and we have a lot of students that live in rural areas. Of course, pricing was important, as it is to all of us. And the classroom footprint. A lot of our classroom podiums don't have a lot of room in them for another huge device, so we had to look at what the footprint was going to be. And I also already mentioned the invisibility to the faculty. So what we looked at the time, and this is what was out there at the time. Now, I know that at this EDUCAUSE, there's some vendors out there that have some new lecture capture solutions. But at the time, we looked at MediaSite, AnyStream Apriza, which is now called Echo 360, Macromedia Breeze, and then just doing something homegrown. So we took a look at all of those, applied our different decision points to them. And what we chose was Echo 360, AnyStream, Apriso, and I'll talk a little bit in a minute about why we did that. But between the time that we put lecture capture in place and we were trying to mitigate these students' needs that we heard, we were, of course, had all the documents, you know, on the course websites for the students. We had, yes. We started three years ago. Yep. The question was, how long ago did we start? It was 3 years ago. We were capturing, like I said, you know, little audio recorders in the classroom, so MP3 files of the audio for the students. If there were any video captures, they were very large, took a long time to download. And then the audio that was captured, the designers for every audio file captured were having to kind of squish it down and put it into an MP3 format. It wasn't captured in MP3. So they were taking a huge amount of time to do that. So it's much better now, let me tell you. So Aileen's going to talk with you a little bit about what we chose in the implementation process, and then I'll come back and talk with you a little bit about what our kind of post-implementation data tells us.
I'm going to see if I can manipulate my hand and my other hand at the same time here, because I'm going to talk to you about implementation. Like Tracy said, we chose the AnyStream Apriso system, which is now Echo. And this is the workflow. It's a very simple process. On our end, we schedule. It's an auto capture. It packages it up. And my analogy is it's like making chocolate chip cookies. You just put all the ingredients in the bowl, and you cook it up, and it goes. It will publish. It does integrate with Angel, Blackboard, Desire to Learn. And then it's very easy for the students to access these files. The implementation on our campus started out with one classroom, and judging on the feedback from the students from that one classroom, then we branched it out and went to other classrooms. The classrooms that you can see here, we have seven systems on campus now. And what happens is there is a machine in each podium. And once that capture is done, after the scheduled capture is done, it goes to the ESS or the Echo system schedule. Then it goes to a media processor because these are all captured in flash format. It's processed. And then it heads out to our streaming server, and then it's delivered to our students. Okay. And this picture is straight from the Echo site, and this is a more technical description of the slide previous. Yes. That's a good question. How much time from the time that the capture stops until it's delivered in my mailbox saying that it has gone to the system and it's ready to be integrated into our courses is probably 10 to 12 minutes.
Can we talk a little bit about the scheduling mechanics? We use it at LSU, and ours is really quick like that, too.
Yeah, it is very, very quick. Yes. Yes, everything is automatic. I'm going to talk a little bit about the scheduling. What we do on our side as an instructional designer is we set up the schedule at the beginning of the semester. We put the exceptions in for each class, whether there be an exams or there are breaks coming up when the students wouldn't have classes, because that's just a waste of server space. And the faculty have to provide us with those exceptions, and that's probably the biggest challenge that we have, is getting those exceptions and making sure that if faculty cancel classes, that they let us know so we can go in and put that in as an exception. Once it's scheduled, it starts automatically. It stops automatically. We generally schedule our classes to capture 3 minutes prior to the actual start of class, because people will start early, and we go 3 minutes past the end of lecture. That avoids being cut off right in mid-sentence if somebody hasn't finished their presentation for the day. Yes? Are you going to get that to that? Yeah, Tracy will get to the pricing. Yes. I'm sorry, you have a question. We have two instructional designers, and we have, right now, we have a temporary assistant. That's a good question. The question was, are the faculty noticing a difference from the students? With some of the technologies that we have in the classrooms that have our capture systems in them, they're able to do calculations on the screen with tablet technology, where in the past they would have to provide the students PDF files of this is the case study, this is the solution, but there was no calculation in between, so the distant students can really get their hands around it. You had a question? Oh, yes, sorry. Okay, so what we did was we did a pilot program in the spring of 2005. Like Tracy said before, we were doing a screen capture. We had an MP3 file, and then we had to marry the two together, and for a 50-minute lecture, it would take us about 3 hours for one 50-minute lecture. And then it would take probably another 20 minutes to go from our machine that we were putting the lecture together on up to our streaming server. Yes, they were large downloadable files, and the students liked it that way, but we didn't like the time we were spending because we would generally have to stay after working hours. We targeted a couple of faculty who I will say were huge, huge factors in the success of this, because when one faculty is happy, the other faculty are happy because they spread the love. The training behind it was pretty minimal from my aspect. I was here from the beginning of implementation, and we had one instructional designer leave, had another one come in, and being able to train her was very, very simple to just get the technology down. And I guess the key in the implementation was we planned everyone. We let the faculty know what was coming, what they were going to be able to do, and just being able to know that it was going to be able to helping the distance students out that much more made the process a little bit easier. And then, of course, always listening to the students. You know, what are your woes? And from the faculty, what do you like? What do you don't like? Okay, so we have the software, which is we kind of have a hybrid right now. We have the old capture stations and we have the appliances installed. So it was a computer. It captures VGA of the lecture. It then goes to the streaming server for processing. And as far as storage is concerned, our streaming server is off campus because we did find out that our bandwidth wasn't enough for so many hits on the server. And with the camera system, the Vadio system, basically what we did was we installed a camera in one room, asked for feedback from the students. Was it helpful? Was it not helpful? Of course, they said yes, and so we went ahead and installed cameras in all the rooms. And the cameras, there are no mats, and there's nothing that the faculty have to put on when they come into the classroom. It follows them around. It's motion detected. It's a pretty slick little system.
So some of the challenges that we some of the challenges that we encountered. As Aileen mentioned, we got the solution in place. It was great. It was exactly what we wanted. The faculty were happy. The students were happy. Everybody loved it. And during this whole time, we kept talking with the network team. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. Well, when I sat down and had the conversation to say, okay, we've ordered this stuff, they went, oh, you're really going to do it. Oh, and by the way, there's no way that you're going to be able to stream this out on our campus bandwidth. And it, particularly during peak periods, when students are studying for midterms and finals and everybody's hitting that streaming server to catch up on the stuff that they haven't watched, there's no way this is going to work. So me, with my non-technical K-12, remember, education background, I'll never forget the drive to Kansas City to a meeting on the phone, on my cell phone, with streaming vendors who were educating me about what they were selling because I didn't have any idea. So I quickly kind of got up to speed on that. We found a vendor partner who was very helpful, very lucrative pricing model, so that we contracted with them. So as the lectures are captured, they're put on that streaming server. The students hit a server external to campus, and it all works really well. So, and you can see there the time frame that we did for implementation. We did a pilot, like Aileen mentioned, and then put things into place. There was a little bit of resistance on, like I said, the faculty loved it, and if you ask any of the faculty now, they do. Initially, there were a few faculty that were very concerned. I mean, you talk about, when you go online, you hear about it, your teaching becomes more public. Well, now you're being captured everything that you do in the classroom on a daily basis. Every comment you make, every time you sneeze, every time you go, So there was a little, they felt a little uncomfortable with that. And then we had to have this discussion about, do the campus students get access to these files? What a great review strategy for the campus students. Pharmacy school is not easy. We work really hard to make sure our students get through successfully. So, but if they have access to that, are they going to come to class? And does that matter? Or what are you doing in class? So they want to come to class. So there's all those conversations, which was, that's a whole different project. But we made the decision that the campus students do not have access to the lecture captures because we are paying to stream this data out, and we're paying per gigabyte of data that gets streamed out. So I couldn't really justify having budget to stream out data to campus students who should be getting it in class. So that's where we are now. Now, if we have a student that's really in academic difficulty, a student that has to be out for some reason, this is a great solution to help them get caught up. We continue to revisit the conversation about whether or not campus students should have access to this, but right now they don't. They do have access to the audio files, but not the whole thing. And then there was a little bit from faculty about, are people going to start going in and watch my teaching? Is this going to be used for evaluation? And the answer is no. And I mean, it's just flat out no. That's not what. And so some of them said, well, are you going to sit and watch them? I thought, do you really think that this is how I have time to spend my day? The answer is no again. The other discussion we had was, oh, we don't need those video cameras. You don't need to see the talking head of the faculty. And if you look at the literature, it'll tell you that. You don't need to see a talking head. Well, you know what? I would beg to differ with that right now. Our students told us loud and clear they want to see that talking head. And you know what? If it bothers them, they can just turn it off. Because the interface that the students see, and if we have a minute here, we're going to show you one. They can just shut that down if it bothers them. But the students that want that talking head because they feel more connected, they have it. So we have continued to put the video cameras in the classrooms. And we heard they really makes them feel like they're part of the class. They like being able to, you know, speed up and slow down and look at things multiple times. And the data came from just 52 students. They said, you know, they like seeing the nonverbal cues. They feel connected. So remember that list of stuff that we got from the data we went over a little bit earlier. This hit every one of those points. It helped to mitigate every one of those points. Our grades in the two pilot courses in one course, the grades went up if no other changes were made. In one course, in addition to putting in the lecture capture, they like restructured the whole course, so it's not really a fair comparison. But at the end of the day, the students love it, the faculty love it, so therefore we have continued to implement. This says that we have, you know, that where do we go from here? I should have said, where have we gone? We've added two more appraisal classrooms. We last week finished adding a third. We're continuing to put cameras in the classrooms. We added an appraisal system or echo system to a laboratory that we have so we can capture those lab experiences and the students can use those to review. And we're also looking at, we have some in the DR up here is the Dominican Republic. We have students that go down there for various amounts of times to help out with the healthcare down there. And it's a great learning experience for them, and we're thinking about how can we capture that, maybe using Echo and bringing that back to the students that don't have the opportunity to go down there. In addition, we have been using it for capturing faculty development session. Sometimes when there's going to be a particularly difficult test, some of the campus students will have access to the captures to review. Guest lectures that come on campus, board exam reviews. We have this, I think, in 8 installs right now, and they're all just in our school. There's not a week goes by that I don't get a call from HR, finance, some other academic unit on campus to say, could we use one of your classrooms? Because it's just so easy, and it produces what people want. So, okay, I think we have a little bit of time. I'll take some questions while I think Aileen is going to bring up a capture here. We do have a little bit of time left. So we'll hold off on the questions. Let's look at a capture. So essentially this is what the students do. When they want to look at a capture, you saw her go through the connection process. They watch it play. They can speed it up. They can go through it as many times as they want. They can put... this can become full screen. They can close this. This could become full screen. They could use this sidebar that you saw to navigate around. And this interface is created automatically as all of those three data streams are captured. So it's been a great solution for us. So, and they can also rewind. So let's go ahead and take questions. I know that we had some that didn't get answered in the back here against the wall. Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah, the question is, do they... Oh, I hear Aileen. Aileen will answer.
The question was, do the faculty use the same video over and over again? The only way we will use the same video again is if something happened to the technology, there was a power failure in the classroom, or the capture just didn't happen because I put it as an exception, they changed their exam date. For instance, in our particular case, it is a health sciences degree, and the information changes very rapidly. It could change 10 minutes before they go to class.
Yes.
That's a very good question. How do we get the audio? We have trained our faculty to walk into the classroom, clip the wireless microphone on that goes through the classroom audio. So the campus students who are sitting right in front of them hear them, but then it also the audio feeds directly into the system, into the capture. There's a wireless microphone on our podiums, and there's also a tethered microphone. And we also have one classroom that has two additional, it's a big, very large classroom. It has two additional wireless microphones, so they can do, like Phil Donahue, run out into the audience and pass the microphone around. And that's all captured. Yes? No, basically what you're seeing is the same thing that's being loaded on the computer in the classroom. So if it was Word, if it was PowerPoint, PDFs, if they were going to... Now, they can show videos. We highly discourage our faculty from doing that because it gets kind of choppy. Document camera, so anything that's being displayed through the classroom projector is captured. No. No, they learn nothing, and they walk in, they put the wireless microphone on, or the tethered microphone, they do their lecture just like they normally would, and they leave. This interface is created by the software. It's created by the capture system. Is that what you're asking? Okay. Oh, editing. No, currently this is uneditable. I'm sorry, the question was, can it be edited? And right now it's not editable, but we also don't have the time to. Can you cut that little 5-minute snippet out because we were having a discussion? The distance students are very in tune to fast forwarding through these things. I have a question in the back. The faculty have been trained to not turn the microphone on until they are ready to start their lecture. Yes? From the time the faculty walks out of the classroom, it's probably 10 to 12 minutes before the email comes to me saying the file's there, it's ready to be linked. I'm sorry, the question was what's the turnaround time? I train my faculty to repeat the question on things like these, and I can't even do it myself. Yes?
PowerPoint. I use a lot of animation in my PowerPoint presentations, and then when I use Illuminate, and the animation is not captured. So when you show the PowerPoint slides, are these PowerPoint slides, or is it converted to an image?
That's a very good question. If you use PowerPoints with animations in them, if they're taking them to... links outside of the PowerPoint, it is not a static image, it is a live PowerPoint. It's basically what you're seeing on the computer screen. Yes, back there.
The question is, what are we doing to kind of beef up classroom pedagogy so it's not just a lecture model? I've been at Creighton now for going on 10 years, and I've been working on that for 10 years. We've made some effective changes. This year, we started a distance Doctor of Occupational Therapy program that's using lecture capture. I should call it classroom capture because they're not necessarily capturing stand in front of the room lectures. They do a lot more interactive things. So we've just had to be more creative about how we engage the classroom students in discussions and how we do that for the distance students. But it's very doable, and be happy to talk to somebody offline about that. But the reality is, when you have 110 or 115 students sitting in front of you, a lot of the faculty, especially in the first year, year and a half, are going to lecture, and I've just kind of gotten over that. But what we're trying to do now is make sure that the lectures are honed in on that enduring knowledge the students need to take away, and that there are at least questioning techniques and things like that that go on.
How are these scenes created? Once at 20, 30, and up to 25, 30, and up to 30, 30. Is that
the scenes that you're seeing being created are created by the software. We don't have to do anything with this. It's all crunched down. It's all put together in a nice knit little package, goes to our server, and it's done. Question in the back. What kind of provisions do we have for people who still write on chalkboards? We actually have somebody who does that, and the camera that this not in this particular classroom that you're seeing right here, but the camera fixes on the faculty, and you can see them write it on the chalkboard. Now that again is a training issue or challenge because there are no issues, right? It is a challenge with this faculty, and let's get away from using the document camera. Let's get away from using the chalkboard because there is a Symposium in that classroom. It is a smart classroom. Please write on the screen. It's going to capture it a lot easier. You're not going to get chalk dust all over you. In the back. How does it get published for the students? Is that what you're asking? We get email notification. It sends us an HTTP notification saying this is your link. And it does integrate. We are an Angel campus. It does integrate with Angel. We are not there yet because we have some challenges with, well, Susie can get the file because she's a distance student, but the campus students don't get the files, and how to differentiate on where those files are going right now. So right now we are manually creating the links, which I can do an entire day of probably 10 to 12 captures in like 45 minutes. Just link them up. I have a student worker that does that normally, though. The question was, do faculty give us feedback and how have they changed their teaching styles? And the answer is yes and yes. The biggest shock for somebody if they're giving a lecture is to go back and watch themselves. And that is probably, you know, you are your own worst critic. And we have faculty who have completely changed their teaching styles. They will they'll integrate more calculations on the screen. We have one faculty who will walk up to the cameras and tell the distance students good morning. She has I don't know what they're called. I call them tinker toys, the little molecular structures. She'll walk up to the camera and make sure that not only the 110 campus students that are sitting in front of her can see what she's doing, but it's also being captured close enough that camera will see it and the distance students can see it as well. Yes? Our students are continental United States, all over, from east to west coast. We have students in Alaska. I shouldn't say continental United States. We have students in Hawaii. We've had a student in the Bahamas, and we've had students when they enter the program. It's kind of an expectation that you're going to stay somewhere in the States, but we have military wives and husbands, and our students do travel around a lot. Yes. Oh, I'll let Tracy take that one.
The cost. Okay, so it's been a while since we bought a new system. I want to say, and it depends on if you get perpetual licenses or annual licenses, I want to say maybe $6,000 one-time fee, and then you pay like an annual maintenance cost. And the tracking cameras are the most expensive proposition of the, but you can do echo without the tracking cameras. The tracking cameras are about $7,000, and then what we pay for our hosting or streaming provider, which you may or may not have to do that depending on your bandwidth capabilities. I mean, if we had a program with 55 students, we'd probably host this on campus, but when we have 165 plus, it just wasn't feasible. No, our distance students and campus students pay the same tuition, So campus student fees are just used for different things than the distance students fees. We're a private institution and already kind of pricey, so we hate to kind of start tacking on. But well worth the money, I want you to know. Yes, sir. Right. The question is, are the faculty given additional stipends or fees? When we started our distance pharmacy program, we increased our pharmacy faculty by half again as much. So the answer is no, because we added more faculty in lieu of paying faculty like overload fees or something. It's captured while the classes are happening in the classrooms, yes. Yeah, and we have a parallel cohort that's online. It's the same instructor for both cohorts. But I don't think there's any, maybe one pharmacy course that only has one instructor. Typically, they have multiple instructors. And the other thing we did that doesn't have anything to do with this is we hired what we call educational mentors, which a lot of them are pharmacy faculty from other universities that are kind of the first point of contact for the distance students. So if they have questions and things like that, they can go to their mentor. There's one mentor for every 20 students. So they're kind of their nice first point of contact.
So the same faculty is teaching two sections of the course, one face-to-face, one online.
That's correct. The same faculty are teaching the face-to-face and the online course. It's one course. Well, in a professional school like this, we don't really have like this defined course loads like you find in a lot of schools. It's just a negotiation between the department chair and the faculty. So please remember to fill out your evaluations. We need to wrap up so other folks can get in here. We'll be happy to answer questions if you want to come up and ask. Thank you all for being here and have a great lunch.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Real Networks enables digital delivery of distance learning coursework, athletic events, and more to students anywhere. Information at realnetworks.com.